Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
at an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everybody. Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden, True Straight Up. We've got a great show for you. We'll be reporting in on the Amber Heard Johnny Depp trial, which is now officially to the jury. But we're brought to you by...
AmericaCitizenPress.com and Denver Cynogenics and Dr. Julie McCallum. Actually, I have another appointment with her next week. So highly recommend her to anyone and everyone out there. Wanted to start today, though, with one of our favorite guests. And he fills in for us kindly when he has time, Dr. Brian June Depp. Hey, Dr. June Depp, thank you for your time. Appreciate it on this Friday afternoon.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're good. We're good. So wanted to talk to you about monkeypox.
Oh my God,
the headlines and all of the local news channels, a case may be here in Colorado. Apparently some guy who was traveled to Canada.
Have to call off that rave that was scheduled for next week.
Although I saw a Saturday night, somebody had put in Facebook, remember Rosanna Dana, you know, the Saturday Night Live character. And she was saying, what's all this talk about monkeypox I keep hearing? So, which is probably is true. So want to just kind of talk to you about it. And are we all going to die? Should we go back to wearing masks? And
can we mail in the votes?
Do we need to mail in the votes and have?
Yes. That's key. Yes, we should go back to masks and face shields, especially when you're in the car by yourself driving around. You should
It's really easy to catch monkeypox driving in the car by yourself.
You can catch COVID that way too, driving by yourself in the car. And the face shield is very helpful.
Yeah. So what's the deal? What is
monkeypox?
Yeah, what's the deal?
Well, monkeypox is it's a pox virus. It's in the same family as smallpox, but fortunately not lethal. I think a few deaths have been reported, but it originated in Africa and started with monkeys. So, and it's an uncommon disease, and we're seeing a resurgence. And it's the question is why? Right. And all we get on the news is hype about, you know, monkeypox and what's it mean, and we're gonna, you know, we're all gonna die, and this is COVID part three or whatever, and a lot of hype and hysteria. Instead of looking at it and saying, no, it's not a fatal virus by any means. And it causes these little bumps or pustules or pox on the skin, which is why it's called a pox virus. And more of an annoyance than anything else. And look at, well, who's getting it? Is everybody catching this? Is this children, adults, healthy, unhealthy? And at least a dozen or so cases in the U.S. have all been gay men or men who have sex with other men or whatever the politically correct term is these days. But that's who it's afflicting, at least at this point. So it seems to be relegated to a specific subset, and there may be behavioral implications that predispose one to this, in which case it's not something that you're going to get going to King Super and touching the credit card machine.
How is it spread?
It's spread by close contact, bodily contact. Instead of an aerosol like COVID, which is, vapor. It's very tiny. It's small. The virus is smaller than the pores in the mask. It's which is part of the issue of masks, whether they work or not. But this monkeypox is spread on droplets, which are much bigger. If you sneeze and hold your hand out, those are droplets. A mask will capture those. So maybe mask wearing, if you're susceptible or have it, would make sense.
Although that's
how it spread, and also close contact, intimate contact, basically.
I was going to say, I mean, from what I understand, what they think, and the World Health Organization actually are the ones who said this, so this isn't just me.
Not just Dr.
Not that you would, not that you would necessarily believe the World Health Organization, I guess, but apparently they've traced the beginnings of it to massive gay rave parties in Spain, basically, and in Europe. And so, yeah, it would seem to me that wearing a mask, depending on where you put the mask, I guess, wouldn't necessarily. But I mean, that's apparently where they've taught. So it appears, as I think it'd be fair to say, am I right, that at least the cases that they're seeing so far, for the most part, have been, it's not a sexually transmitted disease, but it is a kind of disease that is that could be transmitted during close contact, like you have during sex, right?
Right. So that's one of the means it can spread. And if it's spreading during sex of some sort, then it's potentially a sexually transmitted disease. I mean, herpes can spread other ways. You can,
right,
you know, through kissing or whatever. So it's, you know, it's the close contact, and that's how these things are spread. And it seems, at least at this point, to be afflicting, you know, a very small subgroup of the population. And that should be honestly reported. That doesn't mean, right, everybody should cavalierly think that they can't get it, but at least until there's more information, report what we do know instead of dutifully ignoring that fact and not stigmatize a particular group. That's not really good science and not very helpful if people are concerned or want to protect themselves.
What about this, though, too? Is it like, so for instance, I know they stopped, what, in the early 1970s giving smallpox vaccines, but I, right on the cutting edge of being born in 1972, kind of, if you have the smallpox vaccine, does that work against this anyway?
May provide some immunity. It's not really clear because, you know, they just don't know enough about it. And, you know, if it's a variant of previous cowpox and whether it really represents a new disease. And there's, you know, also similarities to at least how the lesions look. You've probably seen some memes where people put together a report from 5 years ago about shingles, showing somebody's hand with these pustules on it, some article in a major newspaper about shingles. And then last week, the same hand, same newspaper, and it's cowpox. So which is it? I don't know. But these things can resemble each other. And, you know, there has to be some diligence about not everything with little blisters is cowpox. Shingles is quite common, and that has a distinct characteristic. But these things, these viruses tend to, at least it seems, maybe affect the immunocompromised. So that's something to think about. And if you're thinking about a rave with a bunch of gay men there, how many are HIV positive and have compromised immune systems?
Right.
That goes to the question of COVID vaccines and whether those are compromising people's, right, immune systems in some way. And maybe this is a consequence. If it's a opportunistic infection, I mean, we saw that with AIDS. I started my medical practice when AIDS was getting going, and it was odd infections that you rarely saw, but in AIDS patients, you did see them because the immune system was compromised. It wasn't able to fight off.
Make it harder.
You know, common, you know, CMV, cytomegalovirus, which most people have antibodies to and have been exposed to. And if you have a functional immune system, it's not going to be an issue. But if your immune system shuts down, which was what was happening, particularly in the early days of AIDS, where the white counts dropped to virtually nothing, all these opportunistic infections became manifest because it's like, you know, opening the doors of the prison, and the prisoners wander out.
Right.
So that's what the immune system does, is keep these infectious diseases in check. And once that's compromised through HIV status, through multiple vaccinations, who knows? But that's at least worthy of exploration and inquiry rather than just fear and, you know, this is,
well, and that's,
we're all going to have to shut down over this.
Right. Well, that's why I wanted to bring somebody like you on, because, you know, it's so hard to get to the truth, right? And to know, and then you see the headlines, like, again, it's like Denver Post, all the TV stations, like monkey first, because implying, of course, there'll be many more, monkeypox case in Colorado, which, you know, it's like first, I don't know. I mean, you know, they don't, it sounds terrible. It looks terrible. They want to fear monger, I believe. Mm-hmm. And like you said, and they want to dance around because they don't want to be canceled. And, you know, you certainly wouldn't want to stigmatize anybody, even though there appears to be in this case some pretty specific behavior that seems to be contributing to getting it. But they don't want to talk about that because, well, then, well, number one, then you can't scare as many people. And number two,
you homophobic. Know, yeah, yeah. You're a homophobe.
Exactly.
Well, and that's bad science, because good science is asking these questions and looking at patterns and saying, is there an association? If there is, that's worth knowing. If there's not, well, then explain why all the U.S. cases thus far have been in a very small subset of the population. So those are questions. I'm not saying it is or it isn't. I'm asking, observing and saying, is there a correlation here? Those are the kind of things science wants to know answers to. Not covered up with politics and political correctness, and we can't talk about it because we might offend somebody. Well, that's not good science, and that's going to hurt people in the long run.
Well, we can count on, the CDC and the World Health Organization doing bad science because they've been doing bad science.
Well, and then you get banned. Pretty soon, we'll be banned from God knows what other social media things for saying, actually, you don't need to be too worried, for the most part about monkeypox. It's, I saw again too, Boulder County is just back on high alert with COVID, and politically, they don't want to tell everybody to wear masks in lockdown, but they're suggesting it. I mean, what do you make of, it's never going to end, right?
Well, that's something we may be going back to. And that's another area that I've been reading some about, but I'm certainly no expert, but whether the vaccines create non-neutralizing antibodies, preventing herd immunity is kind of the basic thing. It's the natural COVID infection that provides immunity to the 25-plus proteins on the virus, nuclear capsid, envelope, spike protein, et cetera. So you have very robust immunity. Rather than, if you look at what the vaccines do, they're providing antibodies to the spike protein, which has since mutated.
Right.
The vaccines are directed toward the original Wuhan virus because that's the genetic code that they used to make the Pfizer, Moderna, J&J vaccines was the original Wuhan or wild type strain, which really doesn't exist anymore. We've gone through Delta and Omicron and other variants. Right. So you're vaccinating. It's sort of like taking 3-year-old flu vaccine. So I'm going to get the flu vaccine, but I'm going to vaccinate to what was the, 2019.
The one that's already, we've already had. Well, and it seems like
that's not helpful.
If you're Bill Gates and pharmaceutical companies, it's very helpful because, it keeps mutating and each vaccine is only pertinent to that specific mutation, which, of course, it's too late by the time it's out there. So, they want to keep giving us vaccines forever, I think.
And I don't know that the current vaccines are based on the current variants that are out there. I think they're the original vaccine, which got emergency use approval and then formal approval. Oh. And that's based on the, original Wuhan strain. These were developed during 2020. And that's the prevalent strain at the time. And that's what the vaccines are directed. So if you're now making antibodies towards something that no longer exists, and it may be preventing your immune system from making antibodies to what exists now. And that way, you're going down the wrong path. The immune system is being misled to, create immunity to something that it doesn't have to, and ignoring what is out there. And by ignoring what is out there, it replicates and it keeps going. Because if you're just vaccinated and haven't had it, you don't have natural immunity. So you don't kill the virus. Natural immunity is called, lethal immunity. And these vaccines are not lethal. They don't stop transmission. They don't stop you from getting the virus. You want a vaccine that if you're exposed, it neutralizes, kills the virus off, and it can't spread to anybody else. And we don't have that.
Well, and so, yeah.
What we're doing is kind of, revving it up. And, it can mutate at will, and the variants can potentially become more contagious and even more virulent because there's nothing stopping it. The evolutionary pressure is pushing it in that direction. So that's concerning.
I still submit that's one of the reasons there's been such a vaccine push is because they need to eliminate the control group, people who didn't have the vaccine and see what they get. And again, I'm going to channel my inner Michael Tao and point out that all of this is for a virus that is pretty much like a cold. I mean, it's not particularly anymore, right?
It's for 99.9 something percent of people. That's it. Yes. Right. Some people get very sick and can die from it, just like they can from the flu. 50,000-60,000 people die every year of the flu. So it may be bad luck. It may be other medical conditions, age, other factors that contribute to it, but young people can die of the flu seemingly healthy. So, you know, it's life isn't fair, and I'm not minimizing that, but, you know, car accidents happen and other things. People fall off mountains, and people that shouldn't be dying do. And that's horrible, but it does happen.
Right.
You want to mitigate those things, but it has to be in a sensible way that's not causing more harm than good.
What about, do you think, politically? I mean, I see them trying, and you know, I can see people like Ted Trimpa, the sort of Soros, sitting in a back room trying to figure out how they can continue to work the monkeypox and how they can continue to work COVID to their benefit with the midterms coming up.
I mean, they're getting together with the Chinese in Wuhan and coming up with a new one for their October surprise.
You never know. I mean, the way things are going, this idea about the immunity that we just talked about, you know, maybe that's all BS and nothing comes of it and COVID all goes away and that's it. But then again, it may not be. And there's some smart people that think that, you know, we may have worse times ahead of us than we've had even. So I don't know. Nobody really knows. This is new territory. We've never had a vaccine like this. We typically do not shut down and mask and do all these things that we've done for a respiratory virus. mRNA vaccines are new. Vaccinating during a pandemic is a big no-no, according to epidemiologists and virologists. You don't do that because it puts pressure on the virus to mutate into
something worse
stuff. So
luckily, you know, our precautionary measures were only for 2 weeks.
Right, yeah.
So 15 days to slow the spread or whatever it was. 17 days, 20 days, I don't know.
Well, you know, and I think the other sad thing is when you have monkeypox, I imagine there are probably a lot of people out there like me who the first thing they do, they look at it and they just go, fake news, not true. I mean, I think our trust and some of the institutions that actually we probably need to trust, I mean, they need to earn our trust, but I think that it's gone, right? I mean, you know, I was talking, Revs, it was the final few days of school, and so there were a lot of activities going on and talking with parents, and they were all talking about it, and from all over the political spectrum, right? And the one thing everybody kind of agreed on is you don't know who to trust or what to believe anymore. And most of them are like, so I'm just going to live my life. Mm-hmm. You know, they did not seem to be concerned about monkeypox overwhelmingly, more about gas prices, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of trust has been lost because if you just look back early in the pandemic, Dr. Fauci and the Surgeon General and other people said masks are useless during a respiratory epidemic pandemic. And then all of a sudden we're wearing two masks and, you know, lockdowns don't work. And then we're locking down.
Right.
Keep kids out of school doesn't work because it's a non-issue for kids. And kids getting it is actually, in terms of herd immunity, it's actually good because kids kind of as a sponge soak up the virus. They have very robust immune systems and they stop it dead in its tracks and they're no longer a potential host.
Wow.
Well, the one that really gets me is that there's a you know, good medicines for COVID, and they made it doctors would go to jail or lose their license if they prescribe ivermectin.
Well, you know
some
that,
of the
yeah.
others. I mean, it's just
ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine were the two. There's an antidepressant, fluvoxamine and Fluvox, that has benefit. There are a lot of off-label therapeutics, and they've been impugned, and doctors and health systems have been prohibited from using them. And unfortunately, the studies, if you look at the only studies that get publicity are the negative studies.
There was a
hydroxychloroquine study out of Henry Ford Hospital. They started it late in the course of the disease. They gave, four times the dose. And if you don't treat it correctly, you can cause more harm than good. I mean,
that's true of anything.
Water is good for you, but if you drink too much, people actually die of water overdose. It can happen. So you have to be cognizant of the dose and give it for a prescribed length of time, not too little, not too long, not too much, too little, et cetera. And it seems a lot of the studies, at least the ones that get publicity, have not been great studies. They haven't had good control groups, or they've messed with the dosing in a way to almost guarantee that it wouldn't work. And there are a lot of prospective randomized trials out there that do show benefit.
Well, and I think...
And you know, yeah, you want to prove something works, but again, it's like most things in medicine, it's a risk-benefit ratio.
Yes.
And you look at the risk of taking these things in prescribed doses, and if the risk is extremely small and there's potential benefit, then why not? I mean, it's like an aspirin if you're having a heart attack or stroke. Yeah, aspirin can cause bleeding, this, that, the other, but in that situation, it's relatively low risk compared to the danger of having a heart attack or stroke. And if it mitigates something, even if you have a bleeding disorder, it probably makes sense to chew an aspirin, because if you die of your heart attack or stroke, you know, your bleeding disorder becomes moot. So it's a risk benefit analysis. And that was missing. It was just sort of the medical establishment and, you know, organized infectious disease and the WHO and CDC, NIH were all against it in favor of vaccines, which turned out not to live up to their promises of you get the vaccine and you'll be safe. You'll never get COVID, or it's going to stop this. We're going to go back to normal. It's going to stop transmission. Well, it's actually not doing any of that.
Right. And maybe
where's the explanation?
Yeah.
Well, then they'd say, well, you'll get less virulent case of it based on no studies, nothing. Nothing right. Said that, you know, it appeared that when it mutated, as it often does, the COVID variants were less lethal, not because people were vaccinated, but just because it mutated to a less lethal form. But that didn't stop them from just telling everybody,
you got
COVID. But
all these people get it. That's the same. Thank God I got vaccinated and boosted. Yeah. Otherwise,
they all say the same thing. But they're, you know, there's still people. There are vaccinated people that die of COVID. If you look at other countries that are perhaps more honestly reporting their data, you know, majority of their deaths are in the vaccinated, not the unvaccinated. Israel's on their, you know, second booster for most people, and they're having all sorts of trouble. They're, you know, they have people in the hospital, people dying, people with other problems. You know, the excess mortality is not,
they don't even want to
talk about it. Not a good explanation for it. The insurance companies notice it because they're all about actuarial tables and numbers and payouts. And you know, the number of excess deaths in the past year is like an order of magnitude higher than what they've ever seen.
Right.
Even the extreme cases are like, you know, once in a lifetime spikes. And then you have something that's significantly more than that. And they're worried because payouts and that, you know, that's their lifeblood. So they're paying close attention. They're not delving into science. They're these people dying?
Right. And they walk a tricky political line. I know, because I've read, you know, try to keep up and do some research on some of that. And you're and not only that, but then you have all these weird illnesses that athletes come out with out of the blue. Right. It's like completely healthy, young athletic, you know, people who are professional athletes getting blood clots and strokes and things like that.
Oh, sure.
And
dropping dead. They're, you know, to soccer player, you know, professional soccer players, tennis players that are, you know, having heart attacks, strokes, some dying. Right. You know, how does that happen? Is it just, oh, bad luck, it's stress, it's that? Well, no.
Maybe.
You
know what I mean?
These are things that have existed 5 years ago. So why all of a sudden? And I don't know. I an anomaly like that, I think, would be of interest. And
you think
news organizations should be asking, well, why is this happening? What?
Right.
I mean, is it something to be concerned about? Is it just, you know, random variation?
Particularly as they keep pushing
more. It's not even talked about. It's just dutifully ignored. And that's why people don't have confidence.
And they keep pushing more vaccines on you.
They don't want vaccine hesitancy.
Right, which is almost, which everybody has anymore anyway. Well, Emmy, we're almost out of time with you. God, this time goes so fast with you. What are you, I know people can always read what you have at American Thinker. You have columns up there all the time. What are you working on? Got anything coming up?
I'm working on the recent shooting in Texas and you know, kind of the hype and spin versus reality. And you know, the assault weapons ban that Biden brags about that really didn't accomplish much.
Right.
The fact that, you know, these shootings don't occur anywhere but the U.S. And I looked at the 50 worst shootings. You know, majority of them are for outside the U.S. It's the top five are not U.S. They're from other places in the world. So it's not like this is exclusive to the U.S.
Right.
And then looking at other things aside from, you know, the cops that stood outside, you know, when there's an active shooter in the building and they're, you know, an hour outside.
Did we learn anything that you can't do that?
Yeah.
Except they said, oh, we thought it was a barricade situation. Helping proof the schools with resource officers.
Well, sure.
You could
hire, you know, former military, retired police. You could put two in every school, and it would cost far less than what we just sent to Ukraine.
Well, you could start by enforcing it. I mean, he went in through a door that a teacher had propped open. I mean,
if the door's left, that kind of defeats the purpose.
Right.
And then mental health. Mental health's a biggie, and there's a quote from JFK addressing the mental health issue in 1963, and that somebody could give the same speech now. That's something any president could talk about, and it's being given short shrift. The mental health system in the U.S. is very fragmented and really dysfunctional, and people that need help are not getting it, and that's a big problem. It seems every one of these shooters is on the FBI watch list. They know of these shooters. They know that they've been making threats, you know.
Right.
But what are they doing about it? They're entrapping people in the Capitol, or they're
right. Yeah, they're too busy with those.
Sending a SWAT team to investigate a garage pull, or you know, stuff like that. Why is everybody on the FBI watch list? And you know, they're just watching them until they do something.
Yeah, and then it's not our fault. Yeah,
that's kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah, watch these people kill people.
No, you're right. There's so many. They pretend and they wring their hands, and Beto O'Rourke does his theatrics, you know, and like you just rattled off a bunch of things there that would make a difference. And, you know, and again, pointing out that it's not just this country, and there's so many things there.
Politicized. And unfortunately, like everything else, it's politicized. COVID was horribly politicized. It's all about pushing a certain agenda, and that goes against science and solving the problem. If you politicize it and just blame something, you know, yeah, you can blame the gun, but you know, the guns in a case or wherever it is, it doesn't get up and shoot itself. Or why are we not talking about who's holding the gun and what their motivations are? That never seems to be.
No.
You know, you ban a certain type of weapon, and well, people get other weapons, or they'll get it illegally.
Right.
Drive a car through a parade.
Right. Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, how many? You know, blame the NRA. How many NRA members are mass shooters? I don't think there are any. So, no. It's kind of, you know, straw dog that they're blaming this, blaming that, instead of looking at real issues that there could be intervention or at least attention to these issues and maybe prevent something.
You know, and I would say final thing, I mean, I sometimes think it's kind of like the gas prices anymore. They don't want to solve it. They just want to be able to weaponize it. And there you go.
Well, Rush Limbaugh used to say that about, you know, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton. They want to keep this stuff alive because that's how they raise money for their organizations. And that's how they maintain relevance, by stoking racial animosity. And all of a sudden they're the ones that are going to solve it if you just write them a check. They've done that. They don't pay taxes on it. And the problem's still there and only getting worse. So obviously that's not working.
All right. Hey, well, listen, thank you for your time this morning.
Pleasure.
Holiday weekend. Yeah, have a happy holiday weekend, and we'll see
thank
you next time. Nice, all right,
guys,
thanks.
Nice color shirt.
Bye.
Oh, yeah, you guys match. Your shirts match.
Yeah.
See you later, sir. Bye-bye.
Take care.
All right. Dr. Brian Jund up there, American thinker. You can find all of his columns there. He has a great... And you guys, I'm sorry, I apologize. We've got all kinds of great comments there going on. And I'm sorry, we don't have time to get to everybody. I see Barney may be entering the waiting room. It's good to see Barney again. I was texting him not that long ago saying, Barney, I haven't heard from you. And he's like, I'm working, Julie. I'm like, oh,
we're bothering me.
Yeah, exactly. All right. This being Party Friday,
yeah,
we want to switch to something. Chuck this is, you know, it's not monkeypox, but it has been contagious. Chuck got Karen Cataline hooked on the Johnny Depp trial.
That's an awful thing to say to somebody.
As well. And she joins us now. She now sends me emails about things and stuff. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, Chuck is obsessed. He doesn't get any work done. We don't do anything.
It is work.
After he listens to the trial, then he goes back and listens to all the lawyers analyze the trial.
Yeah.
And then he tells me what his opening argument would be or his closing argument would be.
We would replay the entire trial, but how I'd do it.
But how he would do it. And now, so we have with this, I have to come on.
Poor, unfortunate that addicted. Luckily, the final arguments were today. And so the jury has it, and they will not be deliberating on Saturday, Sunday,
or Monday.
But then we can go, if they don't come to it today, which I think is unlikely, then we'll have jury watch on starting on Tuesday.
So Karen, thank you. Welcome to the show. I love your background there.
My pleasure. What was your first question? Segue.
So there was today with the closing arguments, which is the lawyers, these are confusing closing arguments in a way, just because of the nature of the claims and counterclaims. In general, your impression of the closing arguments and if you may, a prediction on the jury verdict.
Oh, I have no predictions, but I actually thank Chuck. At first, I was angry. Is that what did he do to me? I mean, I was just like our cat, curious. Why was he so interested in this trial? And after watching it kind of backwards, I found out why he was so interested in this trial. I have kind of a backwards segue because, you know, I'm left-handed. Okay. I do everything backward. Love to see Dr. Brian Jundeff. And here's the segue. I'm glad, number one, we have our flags at half mast. I am in Texas. I don't live very many hours from where this atrocity happened.
Yeah.
And in light of not only the Johnny Depp trial and other things, I would respectfully disagree with Dr. Jundeff on this one point, and I usually agree with him on almost everything. And that is when conservatives point to mental health, it's a very deadly kind of road to go down. Well, I agree it would be good to have more mental health treatment. I also rue and fear the day when feds and government start making mental health their rubric in commissions of crimes, because as we've seen, and I just had Laura Carno on my program the other day, government ruins nearly everything.
Yeah, mental health, but not through the government. You're absolutely right.
There needs to be. It's very scary because we saw what they would do and have done with the red flag laws.
Yeah,
someone's terrified. And the segue is that's the reason, because Chuck is the lawyer. I am a former recovering mental health professional who watched this trial with fascinated interest about the picture that they painted of both of these people.
Okay.
And the only one that rang true was that, in fact, Johnny Depp was abused. He was the victim in this case because he fits fits the character of someone. I also had somebody, you know, Karen Strawn, talking about the fact that domestic abuse of men is much more common than people realize, emotional, physical, and a lot of things. And men are taught never to hit back, never to fight back.
Right, and you can't.
Johnny Depp was an angel, but he clearly wanted to get away and escape.
Right.
And abusers never give up. And that's exactly the picture we saw of Amber Heard, of a woman who would never walk away from an argument. She was mean, cruel, mocking, and belittling. No picture of an abuse survivor, a woman who suffered the kind of abuse that she claims, mocks the abuser that they're so terrified of. And the wonderful Camille Vasquez got to that in one of her closing arguments today. I couldn't believe it. They just kept going on and on. Okay, we're going to have a rebuttal of a rebuttal of a rebuttal.
I know. If you're watching it, it was tedious at parts. Oh, particularly.
But she did say, you know, something to the effect, everything that was presented on the Heard side didn't make any sense from a logical standpoint or from anything else. And I would also add, and then I'll shut up. It's fascinating. It's a fascinating case. Actually, I have two more things to add, and then I'll shut up, which is, for a woman who didn't want anything from Johnny Depp, she sure does want something now. She wants $100 million.
Oh, I know.
And the other thing is, this is a marvelous repudiation of the Me Too movement. And notice that the left had to, everything okay over there?
Yeah. Chuck is, what? Chuck is, are you dizzy? Are you okay, Chuck? Uh-huh. Okay. Now we're fiddling with medication. Not me. He's okay. Chuck is okay. Sorry. Like I wasn't.
I didn't want to keep chatting.
No, he's okay. No, you're fine. You're fine. It's like during a live shot, just keep talking. Okay. He's okay.
All right.
Well, you know, one thing that Chuck mentioned, because I had not paid that much attention to it. And one thing that Chuck mentioned, because I was kind of like, well, you know, they both kind of strike me as people who are like in a toxic relationship and gave as good as they got, blah, blah, blah. And Chuck said, that's only because you haven't watched it. He, I think, would agree absolutely with you. He says, if you watched this, he said, this is clearly one person is telling the truth and one person is viciously lying. And he said, Amber Heard, like you said, has gone out of her way to get this guy's money as much as she could, to destroy his life and his career, and then turns around and wants to play the victim and try to enhance her career out of the whole thing.
It seemed like that's what she was after, but I also noticed there were many convincing things for me. One of them was her inability to just let him get some space from her.
Yes.
Her fear of rejection, her inability to let him leave. And in domestic violence cases, the very first thing they teach in domestic violence families is walk away, cool down, don't let it escalate. And this is what Johnny Depp did. He fits the picture of someone who had a woman abuser in his life, his mother.
Yeah.
He fits the picture of someone who would attract such a person. And in fact, this is the first female abuser he seems to have attracted, having been married and in many other relationships.
Right.
And eventually, as he deteriorated with drug and alcohol, you know, he attracted that which he was comfortable with. So I thought that his defense was, I mean, his prosecution team was brilliant.
Yes.
And hit every mark and every point. And if they don't find for Johnny Depp, I will be very, very unhappy.
I also thought his attorneys did a smart thing in that they didn't go in and ask for a dollar amount. I mean, that's one of the things for the folks who didn't. So he's suing her for defamation. She's actually countersuing him. And so she wants $100 million. She's claiming, correct me if I'm wrong here, Karen, but basically that he defamed her by claiming that she's lying about the whole thing. And
he's even doing it by a third party.
Right. His agent.
By an attorney, as if he's culpable for what his attorney said. They never said that, you know, truth is a defense in defamation. If they could prove that she was indeed lying, which she was,
right,
then what he said wasn't defamatory. He was explaining his opinion. My understanding is that he's asking for $50 million, but as I said to Chuck the other day, it would be poetic justice if they awarded him $7 million, which is exactly what Johnny Depp paid her.
Paid her, yeah.
Did not.
For the whole thing. Well, and
charities.
One of the things, so her, as I understand it too, her basic thing is everyone here is lying but me. All of the people who said they never saw abuse and any abuse they saw was from me to Johnny, those people are all lying. I'm telling the truth, even though I took pictures of everything, but there are no pictures of any actual abuse. I mean, you look at the picture and you're like, And they're like, see, her nose is broken. You're like, no, it's not. I mean, and she's wearing makeup. She's doing these appearances, but nothing that would cover a broken nose or bruises or things like that. So there's no evidence. There's no police reports. There's no anything on her side. And, you know, I think Chuck would watch this and he got angry on behalf of Johnny Depp, because we live in this culture now where, you know, believe the women no matter what. I mean, look at right. How many lives have we seen? I mean, some maybe deservedly accused, but did certain things have to destroy their life over things, you know? And we've seen that happen because of the, once again, the progressive hysteria and the mob mentality, you know, and things that play well on Twitter. And I think that's what's interesting about this trial. On Twitter, maybe Johnny Depp might look bad before all this happened, before the trial. But when you actually hear what's going on, it paints an entirely different picture.
And it makes a case, which I hope it will, for people who might not follow other issues as well as much as we do, that making snap judgments, yes, watching the press that is spoon feeding you pablum to evoke emotion.
Right.
It's pure demagoguery. And furthermore, it's this collectivism. If you're a woman, you're innocent. If you're a man, you're guilty. If you're a Trump supporter, you're deplorable. All of this is collectivism in the service of Marxism, in the service of socialism. I hate to say it because it sounds like I'm a black helicopter conspiracy theorist, but the stuff that we are watching is not accidental. And I always love it, Julie, when you point that out, is that what we have in this country, I can't point to every single who did it, but what we have is what they want. It is a terrible mistake, in my opinion, to attribute good intentions to people who have shown none.
Right.
That doesn't mean we know who's pulling all the strings. It's not just one or two or three people. It's a few. It's whatever. We don't know. But you usually have in your life and in your country what you want.
Yes.
And they've never said, gee, we're sorry, gas prices are almost $5 a gallon in Texas.
That's just temporary. Oh, Karen, that's just temporary.
They're crying crocodile tears because they love high gas prices. They, our cars represent freedom to them, and they don't want us to be free. And well, that's just the doggone truth.
Well, it is. And I think, again, it goes back to that's why they freak out about censorship and any attempt to kind of cancel them, canceling people, because they can't handle the truth. I mean, when people can see the facts and look at things. And I think that's what's so interesting in this trial. I mean, and the Kyle Rittenhouse trial as well. You read all of the headlines and you certainly get one impression because it's put out there deliberately to give you that impression. But when you can see it for yourself, you're like, Kyle Rittenhouse isn't a monster. He's innocent, right? You look at this and you're like, Johnny Depp is not a monster. The monster is Amber Heard. The ACLU and the Washington Post could have cared less about destroying him. It was just like, hey, well, you know, this is good. It's going to jump people, you know, and Amber Heard is like, it'll be good for my career to have this editorial. The ACLU is like, it'll convince people to give us more money. We can all make more money out of this. And if Johnny Depp is destroyed in the process, who cares? He's just a man anyway, you know, and a white guy at that. So,
yeah. And there's this cheapening of justice, a cheapening of life. I wonder, since we're just having fun chattering about this, if the listeners and people on your chat, I wonder what the jury and other people thought of Amber Heard. Every single time she was asked a question, she direct the answer to the jury.
Yeah.
Every single time. And usually, if you haven't, if you're being yourself and natural, you talk to the person who asked you the question, but there was not a time in which she didn't.
It was very to the jury.
It was such a show. To me, it was so transparent.
I think, you know, having watched a million trials, every so often, what was really distracting, I have a couple thoughts on that because I commented on it too. I have seen many trials where you have an expert witness and you're asked the expert witness a question and the expert witness is going to give a lengthy explanation. Okay. In those cases, that's an effective tactic where the expert witness sort of starts talking to the attorney and then he naturally turns to the jury and explains to them, right? But mm-hmm. she would be like, yes, or it would be like a yes or no question. She would look at her attorney and she'd go, yes. You know what I mean? And it was just so stupid. It was, I know, having been in TV forever, when you're on set, they always told you, treat the camera and the co-anchor as if you're in three people having a conversation, right? So you look here, you look here. And that's what you should have done. And so, yeah, that was, among other things, it was extremely distracting. And I think it made her, it made the whole thing, it made her very less believable. Now, maybe her attorneys told her to do that, but they should have told her to knock it off during a break. They're like, Amber, it's not working for you.
I think the most, perhaps, it's funny. Like I said, I watched it somewhat backward. I didn't come in until the defense, Amber's case, and I didn't even hear what the charges were until I went back and watched the opening arguments. Oh. And it wasn't until, I wasn't hooked, truly, until I saw the cross in which Amber Heard could not admit. It was done about five times, that a pledge is not a donation. Oh my God.
So for folks who maybe didn't watch it, so she's like, I did not want any money from Johnny Depp. She got $7 million in the divorce settlement, said she pledged it to the ACLU and to some hospital, and essentially gave them, I think the ACLU, Elon Musk gave the money, who she was dating. She gave a fraction of it to the hospital, and she kept, and this was years ago. It's not like this happened last week. And you're right. And she kept saying, well, I pledged it. The pledge is the same as a donation. I'm like, no, it's not. If you Karen, if I pledge to give you $5, you know, and I'm like, well, Karen, I pledge, it's the same thing.
Well, and the way the question was asked completely ensnared her. Camille said, and it was so great watching one woman interrogate another who was lying.
Yeah.
You know, that was great. And she said, did you donate the money to this charity? She said, yes, I pledged it. No, Miss Harris. And this was repeated three or four or five times. Did you donate it? Yes, she said, I pledged it. So what she did in that one little thing was to show that either she's self-deluded, which she is,
right,
or she's among a great many growing number of truly evil, deceptive people in the world.
And there are a million over there. Hey, well, listen, on that note, because we're kind of getting close, I want to just switch gears with you. You and I have had many conversations where I talk about kids, you know, my son's age and a little bit older, being the hope for the world. I want to tell you a story, and I'm going to give kudos to Fox 31 News. They picked it up here and did a story on it, but this happened at my son's school. This is going to start out sad, and it might make me cry a little bit, but it ends happy, and it gives us hope. So there was a little boy. It wasn't little. He was a sixth grader. And you know how at the end of the year, you bring your yearbooks and everybody signs the yearbooks, right? And apparently this kid has been bullied and stuff a little bit at school, or maybe a lot, and was asking kids to sign his yearbook. And a lot of his classmates were saying no. They refused to sign his yearbook. And so he wrote in the yearbook a note. He signed it himself. And he said, you know, dear, his name, I hope you make more friends next year. And then he signed it. And his mom saw that, and it broke her heart, as it would, right? It's gonna make me cry just talking about that. So the mom posted this on the school Facebook page, and a group of senior boys, not boys, but young men, saw this and talked and got together with themselves and organized, and almost like the entire senior class went into this kid's classroom the next day and said, hey, is he here? And they said, yeah. And they're like, we want to sign his yearbook. And they stood in line, all of these seniors and all these upperclassmen stood in line to sign the kid's yearbook. And they didn't just sign it. They wrote notes of encouragement and said, hey, you know, don't give up. It's okay. You're going to be great, et cetera, et cetera. But it was like, there were no, I don't think the school was even aware this was going on, but the kids, and then the other kids did. And then the other kids were like, you know what? That wasn't nice of us to not sign it. We didn't realize we were hurting his feelings. And so to me, there's hope. You know what I mean? You had this group of kids read this, and could have ignored it, probably, you know, I would have ignored it kind of thing, right? But instead they got together and said, what can we do? And turn and just made this kid's day. I mean, obviously you don't solve all of your problems there, but it was just this gesture, random act of kindness that these kids did all on their own. Nobody was talking about pronouns. Nobody was talking about this or that. They just thought this kid's feelings were hurt and we want to try to make him feel better. And they did.
I love that. Yeah. And it was them thinking for themselves, thinking outside the box and bucking the whatever was the acceptable
exactly
time. And that's what we're trying to say about individuality in general.
Right.
Think for yourself. Don't believe this stuff. Don't believe us.
Well, and not that, and you have the power, right? And exactly. That you have the power. Think for yourself. Don't call the school and ask them what to do. And apparently they just barged into the classroom, right? And said, hey, is this kid here? You know, and they're like, we want to sign his yearbook. You're right. And so there is hope, right? These kids, they weren't snowflakes. They weren't this. They didn't follow the rules. They didn't say, you know, we better check with everybody. They just did it. And it made the difference. So
you can always be counted upon to bring a ray of sunshine.
That one more thing, then nice. I'm going to brag on Raf. He got straight A's again, graduating, going into middle school. But he was voted the happiest kid in his class.
Oh, that's huge.
And his teacher said he always just is a ray of sunshine. And Rev said he made a joke saying, well, I'm kind of depressed. And the kid said, see, even when you're depressed, you're happy. So
I think he gets that from you rather than Chuck.
I think they're good. Hey, listen, thank you for coming on. We appreciate it so much. Want to let everybody know, we'll go. Chuck is fine. Don't worry about Chuck. Chuck is fine. Right. He's starting Party Friday early, Leo, if you're out there. Hey, I want to let everybody know one more thing. We're taking Monday off. We're going to rerun this show. So if you came in late or if you missed part of it, you can catch it again, as you can catch all of our shows at chuckandjulie.com. But once again, happy Memorial Day to everybody. Thank you very much to Karen, to Dr. Brian Junedep, to all of you great guys on in the chat room. I think I saw Barney there. I hope Barney, if not, he's back. You'll have to come in on Wednesday. We will see you all later. Everybody have a great weekend.